From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. This is our strange news segment. I know what you're thinking, folks. Should we even call things strange news at this point? Is not all news and every news program a little bit strange here in the beginning of 2021? The answer is yes, but we decided to call it strange news way before NBC or ABC or the other rookies in the crowd. So welcome aboard, guys. Today's episode, a little bit of hyperbole there. Today's episode is going to take us to some familiar places, some ongoing threats in the U.S. It's going to take us to a story of contamination that I would wager many of us in the audience have not heard. And we're also going to look at something interesting about the COVID-19 stimulus bill that has nothing to do with COVID-19. I'm very excited about all three of these. Where do you guys want to begin?
I personally want to start where you just ended there, Ben. Can we begin there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly intrigued.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, this is so bizarre, but all right. If you are, I think you're aware of this, even if you're not in the United States. The government of the United States, federal government, has spent a long, harrowing time arguing over the specifics of what we call the coronavirus relief government funding bill. One thing that may be surprising to a lot of people who haven't really drilled into this stuff before, or to a lot of people who are not from the U.S., is that our legislative branch has this ridiculous, cartoonish habit of tacking extra shit onto a bill that has nothing to do with the purpose of the bill. How far does this go? This goes so far that you could, for instance, say you and codename Doc and Matt and Noel and I are all part of Congress. We're a Congress of five, right? And one of us says, hey, it is literally raining cats and dogs. We need to make a raining cat and dog bill to combat the massive damage that's happening with all these dogs and cats hitting the sidewalk. And then someone says, well, we could pass this, but I also want a subsidy for toe cream. And it has to pass that way. Like, that's the example, right?
Yep. It does feel a lot like that, Ben. Like, just something completely out of the blue has to go in the bill or else it's dead. Is that, that's not poison pill necessarily. Could
it's
be
pork,
a poison
right?
pill.
Isn't it like it's like you give me what I want, I give you what you want, sort of. Even though if the thing that we want is something that everybody wants. It always struck me as a little disingenuous and kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you're a member of Congress, you're always kind of pitching. Everything you do is ideally a pitch to your constituents for why they should elect you the next time your election comes up. And so to solidify their base, many members of Congress are like, let's take this bill for making a national explosions in the sky holiday, and let's tack on something that is a subsidy for the munitions factory in my constituency, you know.
I thought you meant the band.
I did.
Oh, yeah, he did. Really. I think he did. Oh, yeah. Ben is a secret post-rock fan, which I just recently found out. I mean, you mentioned them occasionally for your like study listenings because they're instrumental, but I recently found out Ben and I have been a member of the same post-rock Facebook group for many years.
That's amazing.
I did want to add, I like this idea of a Congress of five. I feel like we'd get a hell of a lot more done than the current setup. Just putting that out there.
You know, five, now that we think about it, is great because there won't really be a deadlock, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our only constituents being our wives, girlfriends, or children.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine how corrupt they would become and how quickly?
Oh God!
Just because
no.
the amount no. of money that would be shoved at five singular people's faces.
Oh, you're right. We wouldn't let anybody know who they are. Completely anonymous. Only we could just let the cat out of the bag. But no, my God, Ben, please continue with this. I'm fascinated.
Well, this practice has happened again. The coronavirus relief and government funding bill was signed into law in December by current President Donald Trump as we record this, which is tricky that we have to say as we record this right now. He signed it, late December, and this bill is $2.3 million strong. As you know, it doesn't have a lot of stuff that various Congress members or various factions of their constituencies wanted, right? Like a lot of other countries are getting, like our northern neighbors, I think we're getting up to $2,000 a month for the duration of the pandemic. The big hot button issue on the table for a lot of households in the U.S. was whether there should be any kind of monetary or financial relief for the millions who are unemployed or facing hardship, and if so, what that one time or that second stimulus should look like, $600 or $2,000, I think were the big numbers. But this bill included something else. Of course it did, because it's the U.S. Congress. It doesn't matter who's in power. There's never going to be a bill that's just about the bill. It's like if you're in a bad relationship, the fight is never really about the fight. It's about something else. You know what I mean? And those dirty dishes are kind of like a metaphor for all the ways you resent each other over the years. I'm sorry, that description probably just ruined someone's day. But this extra thing that was tacked on, one of them, is not as ruinous as that horrible relationship example. For some reason, this COVID relief bill began a 180-day countdown for the U.S. intelligence agencies, all of them, to tell Congress everything they know about UFOs, or, you know, as we know, what they prefer to call them, unidentified aerial phenomena. So, yes, we're going to try to survive the pandemic as a nation, but also, while we're at it, let's say that you have to tell Congress what the hell's going on. Because remember, the armed forces spent millions of dollars researching this, and it's not something that's ever been presented in totality to Congress. Pretty nuts. I'm not
it
sure
really
why,
is.
Why there's a 180-day thing. I think that might just be time for them to collate all their information and cross-check and fact-check, et cetera. You can read about this in CNN. You can read about it in Vice. They have a good article about this. It also puts in something else. It doesn't say just give us this one-time report. If you want to read it, it's buried in the committee comments section of the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, which is also inside this massive spending bill. So it's a stipulation. It's like you're going into the liner notes of a really detailed, you know, like one of those special collector's edition vinyls that has the whole discography of something. Mm-hmm. And
they're like $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this long printed documentary or oral history thing, and you find like one liner note, and you're like, it's like, this was, you know, shortly after Mick Jagger was kicked out of NASA. And you're like, wait, what? And so the Rolling Stones began. But that's not true, I don't think. But this one also puts in this process. It says there needs to also be an interagency process for ensuring timely data collection and centralized analysis of all unidentified aerial phenomenon reporting for the federal government. Designate an official responsible for that process. Identify whether any of these UAPs are national security threats, and explicitly say whether any of the nation's known adversaries could be behind this. And the submitted report has to be unclassified. So this has been confirmed by Snopes. This has been confirmed by CNN, by multiple sources. It's going to happen. For all the UFOlogists or UFO enthusiasts in the crowd, The countdown has begun. My first question for you guys, do you think this will actually happen?
So I'm just reading about this for the first time, Ben. According to what I'm seeing, this is all contingent on whether or not the executive honors this request and whether or not the administrations among the, well, the administration, which is the executive, as well as all these other military personnel who are part of the Air Force, the Navy, and all these other places, whether or not they actually cooperate to get this information out there and get it declassified. So it's like there's an order to do it, but you still got to get everybody to actually do the thing, even though there's this, they're calling it a request. It's more of an order, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. It's phrased as an order with several different things that could go wrong, or it's sort of structured as one. Mm-hmm. This is being put, it might surprise some people who haven't had their eyes on this. This whole thing is being pushed by Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
He is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. They want this to happen, but we also, any ufologist in the U.S. can assure us that there have been multiple statements, kind of off-the-cuff statements of various presidential candidates. It's usually while they're running for president. They say, okay, and also, one other thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to figure out this UFO stuff. I'm going to get it released. Bill Clinton said that. I can't remember what George Bush said in that matter. But a couple of other folks, even Donald Trump at one time may have said this. They've said that when they're going into office or when they're running for office, but when they're actually in office, it takes a back seat or a back burner. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff to think about when you're president, I assume.
Yeah. And there's always the much assumed conversation that any executive coming into office has with the intelligence community that's basically, you can't look behind those doors. You mm-hmm. can't know what's back there for your own safety and for national security.
Oh, you know the old, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but there's an old joke that changes depending on which industry of the U.S. government you're in or which genre, which branch. Goes, let's do it with the president. So it goes like this. There's a guy who's elected to be the president. And on the day of his, you know, his first real day on the job, he goes in the Oval Office and he asks the outgoing president for any advice. And the outgoing president says, well, I left two envelopes on the desk. And if anything really screwy or terrible happens, no matter how it happens, just open that first envelope and you'll know what to do. And so they say, okay. And then, you know, like a year or two passes in their term and things get really dicey. Something terrible mm-hmm. happens. Maybe it's this current president's fault. And so they open the top right drawer of the desk or whatever, and they take out the first envelope and they open it. And the envelope just says, blame it on me. And it's signed by the other president. And so they go on television and on the networks of the circuits and they say, it was the other guy. Mm-hmm. And then boom, their ratings are back up. They're on to year three. Toward year four, something goes wrong again. Very, very wrong. And this president says, okay. They open the second envelope and they think, all right, what am I, first time it worked. And they read the second envelope and it says, write two letters and find two envelopes. that's it. And it makes you wonder, like, is that the kind of situation we get in when we're talking about how these reports get released or who is accountable for the release of these and the various ways that these could go wrong? And then, of course, the argument that all of this UFO release stuff that's come out, because there has been a lot. There's the argument that all of it is a distraction from ongoing domestic affairs, which I don't know what to think about that. I mean, what do you guys think? Because a lot of the stuff that's being released is not new by any means.
Yeah, but it's nice to be able to have access to it all in one place, like from an official source, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of piecemealing it together from various reports and dribs and drabs on the internet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Look, I'm never going to not think disclosure is coming until it comes. Okay. So
I had a really good conversation with a very smart friend of mine. We kind of hang out every month or so and just kind of chat about life stuff. And, you know, he's into conspiracy theories. He listens to the show. And he just doesn't think it makes sense logistically, the idea of disclosure. Like he was sort of like, just what we know about science and the way time works and the way distance works, it just doesn't, he doesn't see it. And I kind of was on the same page as you, where I'm like, oh, all this new stuff is coming out. I feel like we're on the edge of it. And he just kind of poo-pooed it, took the wind out of my sails a little bit. But then I started thinking about what he was saying, and I kind of feel that side of it too. I don't know. What are your thoughts in terms of the logistics of disclosure, or the logistics of actual alien contact?
It's all good, dude. Your friend just doesn't know that the aliens actually are from Earth, and they live inside the
snap,
Earth, and
Matt,
there's no distance required.
That's a season 6 spoiler. The thing is that the math is nigh impossible if we are assuming conventional rules of time and space. And I think we've talked about this before. The same math that makes it a statistical certitude that we would have other life in the universe is also the same math that makes it virtually impossible that we would ever meet, just the time and the space involved. But if those rules don't always apply, then it's an entirely different conversation. Or if there's, to Matt's point, if there is something that is closer to home than we imagine, then we could find ourselves in a very different conversation. You know, for the longest time, one of the most plausible answers has been suppressed technology built by Earthlings, because we know that happened in the past. And we know that other governments, including Uncle Sam, folks, those other governments were more than happy to take sightings of space-age bombers and stuff and be like, oh, yeah, that's a, that's an alien. I guess you're right.
It must be.
Yeah.
It's definitely not us or ours. Nope.
No, I mean, who would build a flying black triangle?
This reminds me of the old urban legend / horror story. The call was coming from inside the house.
And I'm of course, I'm joking about the concept of extraterrestrials being terrestrial and all of that. Although unidentified submerged objects will always, always have a place in my heart. I think any light we can shed on this stuff is good light, because it will calm down somebody like me that is so excited and itching to get actual evidence if there's nothing there and we can, you know, conventionally explain all of these things. But it'll also, I think in some weird way, I don't know, God, this sounds so just happy and hippie.
Go for
it. But in some way, thinking about this stuff, even without the reports and all the info, just thinking about other life on other planets in some way brings us together to think about ourselves as one, our, you know, about humanity and all that stuff. Ugh, I feel bad saying that, but it's kind of true.
Yeah, I feel you. And also, you know, if I was going to design a t-shirt for this, I would say, who needs extraterrestrials when terrestrials are extra enough? I mean, it's not going to work. It's too many words.
Like extra is in like a negative thing? Like,
terrestrials,
oh man,
are
they're extra.
Extra. Yeah. I mean, we are. Look at this. Like, if you're any other form of life on the planet, honestly, fuck humans.
They're
the
worst
ones.
We're the worst ones. Yeah. That's why we can't have nice things.
So the last bit of news on this, for anybody who's like, I don't want to wait 180 days, we live in uncertain, terrible times. The Middle East is a powder keg. Authoritarian governments also have nuclear weapons and are increasingly less hesitant to invade other places. I want to know how the movie ends now. Well, right now, officially, you can obtain every single declassified CIA document on UFOs. You can officially do it at a site that we have shouted out in the past, the Black Vault, which is a privately owned clearinghouse for declassified documents in general. But they have released a downloadable archive with PDFs containing all the CIA files on unidentified aerial phenomena. I'm not sure whether this includes USOs yet, Matt, but let's always hope while we can. Some of these reports date all the way back to the 1980s. This archive is the passion project of the founder of the Black Vault site, John Greenwald Jr. And we're looking at the result of somewhere a little less or a little more than 10,000 different FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request. And this is the work of decades for this guy. So do check it out if you want to learn more. Be warned, this will have the notoriously moving, compelling language of a government agency. These aren't exactly page turners, is what we're saying. But what I would love to do is crowdsource this and get a sense from our fellow conspiracy realists over which of these reports, over whether there's a hidden diamond in the rough here, you know what I mean? Or a gem that corroborates with some other proven historical event, you know what I mean? Like the allegations of unidentified flying objects disabling nuclear weapons, things like that, right? So let us know. And let us know what other weird stuff you found in the COVID-19 stimulus bill, because it's 5,600 pages, you guys. There's all kinds of stuff in there. It's like an unedited Stephen King novel. Wait, all Stephen King novels are unedited.
Oh, it says a Stephen King fan. I love it. It's totally true. Really quickly, just you know, in terms of like what these look like, are they like footnotes kind of? Or like how, if you're actually looking at the documentation, how are they slipped in there? Like, that's what I kind of want to know without actually having to read the thing, because that sounds tedious and terrible.
Many of these are typed letters from way back when, and it's difficult to even see and decipher everything that's said in there, let alone, you know, search a PDF, because they are all in PDF format. There's about 342 megabytes, I think, in the entire thing, if you're going to download it. You know, some of it is the actual Freedom of Information Act, like letterhead or something, and then there'll be a black vault. A second header that tells you about that site, and then you'll get the document that's like one to X number of pages.
Yeah, and I think, Noel, you might have been referring to just how that slipped in congressionally in a relief bill.
Oh, sorry.
No. These are both very good questions. So part of it is just that, look, I'm not accusing anyone in specific of being disingenuous. Every Congress member has a staff, and their staff assists them with understanding what's going on in these bills. But this bill in particular is controversial because some members of Congress say that by the time it was finally shared with them, it was like a few hours before the vote. So how on earth was there time to read it and digest everything involved? And this kind of stuff happens quickly. The answer to how this can be squeezed in is that there's so much there that you can kind of matryoshka doll a subheading into another subheading into another subheading into another subheading, and then an, oh, by the way, aliens.
Well, yeah, and by its very nature, I think the issue, there's a lot of issues with like parliamentary procedure and our government. It's by its very nature not transparent at all. Even the way these things get slipped in, it's like burying the lead. You know what I mean? We have to kind of dig to even find a semblance of what the hell's actually going on in some of these things. And that just seems wrong to me. But maybe it's like rewards those who like do the digging and do the homework. And it implies that if you don't care enough to like look, you shouldn't know. But that just seems wrong. I don't know.
That is wrong. Because right now, the level of information we're talking about, the level of information processing, is simply beyond the grasp of someone who doesn't have the specific job of doing this every day. There's just no way. And there's no way a single person could read the entirety of the things that are being passed by Congress. That's why these staff members kind of divide and conquer. But we spent a lot of time on this. It hasn't happened yet. You have our word, folks, that if 6-ish months from now we figure out what's actually going on, if the Badger does finally get out of the disclosure bag, then we are going to be all over it. We'll have a party. We'll have like a physical in-person UFO party somewhere cool. Dave and Buster's, I don't know. Let's fly out on the company dime to Area 51. It's either the beginning of a new world or the end of the old one. Who knows at that point? But we're still in this world and we're still in strange news. So we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor and then we'll be back with more. We'll be right back.
And we're back. And my news story today sort of morphed a little bit, sort of sprouted some heads. I'm going to try to keep it manageable. But it started off with, I think, what we can all agree is very important information. This coming out within the window of time that this FBI memo reports, an internal FBI bulletin warned that as of yesterday, the day we're recording this is Monday, yesterday being Sunday, the 10th, there are plans circulating on the internet for armed protests at all 50 states' capitals. And that's really, you know, the FBI issued at least one other bulletin, according to the AP, where they sort of appeal to law enforcement nationwide to be prepared and not have another repeat of that absolutely ludicrous display that we saw on Wednesday of last week, warning that there's potential for clashing with police, there's potential for violence, there's potential for targeting and kidnapping, just like we saw on Wednesday. Army General Daniel Hawkinson, chief of the National Guard Bureau, told reporters today that the National Guard is also looking at any issues across the country to deploy in advance. So, okay, great, lesson learned, but be careful if you live near a big metro area, a downtown with a Capitol building. I would steer clear. I would be very cautious about that. So this in and of itself is, I think, important news to disseminate, because I actually, it felt a little below the fold. My friend texted me this information, and I initially, using the search terms FBI armed protests, I didn't get any hits. And then he told me it was on the Raw story, which it was. And then I found it directly by searching the Raw story. And then I found it on ABC, who initially obtained that. But there's not a whole lot of reporting about this. So hopefully this is reaching some folks that maybe hadn't heard about this. Then this is the part I'd like to just open up and chat with everybody about. It led me down this rabbit hole. I think everyone's familiar with the social media alt-right, or whatever you want to call it. Let's just call it far-right platform, Parler. Mm-hmm. In addition to many major social media and web hosting companies pulling the plug on Donald Trump's online presence and others of his ilk, Parler was seen as kind of like, okay, we're not welcome on Twitter anymore, we're not welcome on Facebook anymore. All of these people made this mass kind of egress to Parler. And then very quickly, Parler's web hosting support was pulled. Amazon Cloud, we know that Amazon, one of the big things that they do is have these massive server farms and do web hosting. And so if you don't have anybody to host your service, you don't really have a service. So currently, Parler is down. But here's the rub, or here's the kind of story within the story. Before that happened, an intrepid, let's call him hacker, whatever you want to call it, a power user of the internet, went and did what's called a data scrape of all of these archived, or all of these like archived posts, because apparently the code of Parler, the actual base code, is super holy, let's just say. Not holy as in, oh, but like full of holes, easy to poke through. There's a really great Reddit page called Parler Watch, and mm-hmm. on it, there's a lot of, you know, screenshots of different tweets and you know, communications about this. And apparently, the internet security company Okta, which we actually use at work, OKTA, they said that apparently Parler was, it's basically an authentication protocol that forces you to do like a dual authentication. So you try to log into a thing, it pings you on another device, you then say, yes, it's me, and then it lets you in. That's what it's for at the base level. But apparently the Parler coding team or whatever was using a free trial version of Okta. And this hacker was able to poke holes in that and essentially archive posts with the identities, including geolocation information, of thousands of posters, many of which were directly involved with the insurgents, let's call it, at the Capitol on Wednesday.
And their driver's license info too, right?
That's the thing, Ben, and I was with you there on that one, too. That was the initial story that came up. That is not true. Mm. Initially, it was said that it was hacked and that somebody was able to clone admin accounts and then dig through and do all this nefarious stuff by, like, cloning millions of admin accounts and basically just kind of, like, you know, sowing chaos on the platform. But what is true is that it's been deplatformed. It's not online anymore. None of the app stores will carry it, and now this hacker, Goth and Donk NB, username, has archived all of this stuff and is reporting it to authorities. So that was part of the original story, Ben, that was a Reddit story saying that, oh, and also, they have to scan their driver's license to be part of it. And maybe that part is true, but a lot of the other pieces in that initial story were not true. So I really actually am not sure, Ben, but I saw that as well. But what do you guys think? Is this a matter of shutting down free speech? Is this a matter of just doing what's best for, like, national security? Where is the line? It's just a fascinating thing to consider.
Yeah, agreed. And it's an important thing. It's going to be important for the generations that come after us. You know, if we think beyond the immediate window, right? Mm-hmm. I want to give a shout out to a colleague of ours. I was having a similar conversation with the creator of Prodigy, a new podcast. His name's Lowell Brilliante. You'll hear more about him soon, later, I hope. But he had hipped me to Parlor Watch.
Yep, same. Absolute same. And I meant to shout him out as well. Thank you, Ben. Also, check out his episode about the Unabomber on Prodigy. Fantastic stuff. Really great podcast.
And we were talking about some of this and talking to some of my friends in the tech industry who are just, you know, everyone from far to one side or another to the very apolitical people who are primarily motivated by money. I would say, or motivated by, you know, their own very specific ideologies. And there is a worrisome aspect here to the idea of, okay, so freedom of speech is something constitutionally guaranteed, right? Mm-hmm. But a private service is the owner of its own playground, right? If you were on the McDonald's playground, they don't have to say that you slide down slides in a stupid way. Mm-hmm. They don't have to say you're breaking rules. They could just kick you off the playground and you can't say it's my governmental right to be on this playground because it's McDonald's.
No shirt, no shoes, no service. That is the prerogative of the individual business, right? And they can eject you for any reason and you can leave kicking and screaming. But at the end of the day, they can have you dragged out by police if they don't want you to be in there and don't have to, you know, say boo about why that is. It's the same with any of these free services. It is a privilege to be able to access these. Sure, you can have, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, is it even a right to have access to the internet? Like,
not yet.
Exactly. So all this free speech talk in terms of these discussions, I think, is very misplaced.
And so is then a legislative branch like Congress, are they abdicating state power to private entities? Are we becoming more of a technocracy than we are a democracy? It's a good question, and it's kind of— Edward Snowden had said the same thing. Actually, our pal Jake from Q Clearance was saying the same thing. And I understand how, first off, if you think that people inciting violence should have already been banned from a social network, then this move comes very, very late, right? Late in the game. So late, in fact, that it could almost be seen as symbolic.
Yes.
But there's such a pickle here. How do we unpack this? So in the case of Parler's death sentence, it's funny because we didn't see any state level demands to close Parler down. We saw what could be called ostensibly the free market. It seems like the free market decided to refuse service. And if that's the case, then there's no two ways about it. That's how it's supposed to be able to work. But some people, of course, are not happy because some people were big fans of Parler. But their security always seemed kind of kind of lame, didn't it?
It did. And really quick, Matt, I want you to have a chance to respond as well. You are absolutely right about the driver's license, Ben, but it was the same way when you get verified on Instagram or Twitter, you have to scan your driver's license to be verified. So there are certain, they call them verified citizens. And so that information is stored with those particular accounts, government issued IDs, like driver's licenses or military IDs or what have you. But yeah, I mean, stuff like this, these deleted posts, one that Donk NB gives as an example from a user named CM underscore Patriot. Shut them down, Mr. President. Try them, hang or shoot them publicly. The traitors, thieves, and perverts who have taken our great blessed country hostage.
Hmm.
That's the kind of chatter that's going on this service. And I would argue calling for hanging and publicly executing crosses the line from free speech into something very different.
It's certainly dangerous. Even if the intention there isn't truly that, and you can argue forever that because of free speech, you can say something like that. But that's why we have rules about yelling things in movie theaters where you're endangering other people. This is what I would say, just from my perspective. My wife came to me and asked me about this right before we came into this room to record. She specifically was asking me about the rumors that are going around right now of this very thing, where there may or may not be attacks planned at all of the state capitals, whether or not there's going to be something else occurring in Washington, D.C. and the inauguration. I just would say from my own research looking around, it does feel as though there is a ton of chatter about this kind of event in a lot of places from a lot of different people. And tensions are ridiculously high. And the people that seem, at least to my eyes, the people who are posting about actions they want to take, things they want to see happen, it looks as though they so deeply believe that there is something terrible happening.
Yeah.
And that they believe they are, and I don't mean to speak for anyone, and I do apologize if it's coming off that way, but it seems as though they want to fix something. They want to fight back against some evil power. And it is very much slanted in a religious way, at least the things that I have seen. Maybe that's not true for everyone and for a lot of the people, but there appears to be statements that are spreading widely that there's some kind of religious slant to a war going on for either the soul of America or for the world. I just want to caution everybody out there to really look at where your information is coming from. And I say this to especially to anyone listening that maybe believes some of this stuff. We always on this show say we're not going to make you feel bad for believing what you believe, but we do implore everyone to do as much research and vetting as they possibly can on the beliefs that they hold dear and true. So I would put that out there as a message to everybody. Just because somebody says it online on, a Facebook channel that you follow, on a podcast you listen to, on a whatever TV show, doesn't mean that it's true if somebody says it. Look into the sources when there's something this serious going down.
The FBI has also released some memos warning of various uprisings. They did so well in advance of January 6th, of course, did so well in advance of the 19th, the 20th, and then also what I would say would be called situational triggers. The Independent ran a great story on just earlier today, as we record on January 11th, on potential for a huge uprising planned if the current president was removed using the 25th Amendment, which again, at this point, Vice President Pence has gone on record saying he will not pursue nor invoke. But look, the main thing is, for most people who are discussing these kind of things, there's not a high percentage of people who will actually have the wherewithal to travel and to deploy these methods. So you're worried more about the small percentage of people who do have that wherewithal, right? Logically. And that still could be a large group of people. But the second part of that is that the U.S. inauguration now, especially, is probably going to be one of the most, it's always been one of the most heavily guarded events of its 4-year cycle. It's probably going to be even more heavily guarded at this point, unless the rumors of compromise within the ranks of LEOs and the military are more widespread than they have appeared to be up to this point. So, yes, there's no two ways about it. We are at a very, very tense time. And the fact that the Alphabet guys, the intelligence agencies, were megaphoning this so much in advance, and the fact that the Capitol was still woefully understaffed on January 6th, it just looks increasingly suspicious, which I know is very on brand and stereotypical of me to say. But isn't anybody else a little bit weirded out by that? Like, just a bit? Doesn't it seem like this was clearly telegraphed? I don't know, but to your original points, Noel, I think you're right. This is something that has been disseminated. There are at least some groups with an active plan to do something in some states, even if they end up being just lone actors who are radicalized on the internet.
That's right. And I have an ethical question for both of you gentlemen. Is this doxing? I mean, so far, I haven't seen any actual names and addresses, phone numbers, home, personal information released publicly. I know there are some accounts on, like, Instagram, for example. There's one called, I think it's called Homegrown Terrorists, where there is some doxing going on with some of the people that were seen, you know, participating in the looting at the Capitol. This, to me, there's a lot of discussion in these comment sections on these articles. You know, some people from the right coming in and saying, this is illegal, this is doxing. This is not, you know, appropriate use of the internet. That this is literally breaking the law. What do you guys think about that? If this information is literally being used to track down people that committed a crime and then report them to the authorities so they can be taken to task, is that like vigilantism? Like what is this?
You're, I think, referring specifically to some Reddit comments. The thing is, Reddit doesn't have the best track record of civilian detective work. Consider the case of the Boston bombing, where they got the wrong people. Then also, I would say, if you're doxing someone who is not proven to have committed a crime, and you are a civilian, you need to be very careful, because that can, with the best of intentions, lead you down a very inadvisable path. There are intelligence agencies that are hunting these people down. Say they're hunting people who've actually broken the law down already. And those folks, like the FBI, let's not forget, they were able to find one protester via Etsy.
That's right.
Because of a tattoo that person had. So they have more resources. But I would caution people, because, you know, social media, and Reddit is social media, it's made to manipulate you. It's made to incite.
Keep you on there. Yeah.
To incite you toward engagement and toward further action of some sort. So even with the best of intentions, you need to, like Matt said, you need to carefully vet your sources, also vet yourself and your own motivations. Unless you are a professional with this stuff, then you might accidentally, with no ill intent, you might accidentally screw up, and you might even get yourself in a pickle. Does that make sense? I hope I'm not being too extreme there.
No, it makes perfect sense.
It definitely does.
We're pausing for a moment for a word from our sponsor.
And we are back. I just want to jump back a little bit in the conversation. Ben, you're talking about the people we really need to be worried about, the ones who may actually take some kind of violent action in you know, physically somewhere in the world. I totally feel you, and imminently that is what, you know, intelligence agencies and police departments should be worried about. What worries me right now are all of the bystanders, essentially, who are passively commenting on a YouTube video or on a Facebook post that I'm going through, that are just seem to be believing whatever is being said in a lot of these things.
Yes.
And then when I personally go through and vet the information that's being spoken, you know, as often as I can, I'm noticing that they're referencing things like NESARA, NESARA. It's called the National Economic Security and Recovery Act. It was not a real thing.
No.
And but it is believed to be a real thing by someone talking on YouTube the way I am right now.
Right. Right.
And they will say it. And then someone else listening hears it. And then they just say what was said on that YouTube video rather than looking it up and seeing that it was a part of essentially a conspiracy theory newsletter chain that was going out by somebody who was not credible.
Well, even the initial story about this hack was incorrect, was absolutely full of misinformation, maybe with the best of intentions, but I couldn't find a story about it. I couldn't find anything to back it up. And it was all from this Reddit kind of like chatter and Twitter. And then Reddit, even it got upvoted. The incorrect story got upvoted thousands and thousands of times. And they had to put a sticky post on the Reddit page saying, hey, that one was dead wrong. Here's the new info. Look at this one. Upvote this one instead, which I think is interesting that they even went to that trouble.
And in the interest of full disclosure, we don't know which parts of this podcast are going to be YouTube clips, Matt. Although I thought that was sly. That's up to James. That's not up to us. Don't poison the well.
Okay, sure. Well, or listening to a podcast and hearing somebody say it to them and then just taking that info, synthesizing it into their own thoughts rather than looking it up. And there's no way to look up everything you hear. That's why you have to vet the individual more so than anything else, which is it's a tough thing to do because every individual, including this guy who's either talking right now on YouTube or on a podcast, gets it wrong sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the end, it's just scary thinking there's so many people that believe something wholeheartedly that you can prove to be false.
So what we're talking about here, what I think you're talking about, Matt, you're talking about the importance, or we're all talking about this all the time. We're talking about the importance of vetting your sources and just like trying to read a 1,000-plus page COVID bill while the clock is ticking. This is very intimidating. It's very difficult. And at times it's impossible. So you do have to use context clues. And when you use context clues, you have to be very, very careful because odds are the stuff that's making you feel like you're increasingly agreeing with yourself, not all of that might be true. Your brain might be fooling you, especially if you're going to a group of like-minded people, because every single member of the human species suffers from what social psychology calls group polarization. Again, if we're our Congress of Five that we used at the top of this episode, and the five of us get together because we think in general, Viennetta, that ice cream novelty
it's not available around here, by the way, Ben. I was crushed. I know, man.
But what it was like the five of us got together just as like a fan group of that. And it became a hot button topic. And we started feeling persecuted just like in a cult. Then we only talked to each other and we only talked about the mission to get this wonderful ice cream novelty back into the world. And you fast forward 1 year, we're going to sound like Viennetta extremists.
Radicals.
Yes, radicals. Yeah. And I choose ice cream because it's a fun, innocuous example. But what you're talking about, Matt, is absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And no one is immune to it. It is a neurological, hardwired aspect of the human being, of the human brain. Mm-hmm. Just because you're like, oh, well, this one didn't get me, I don't believe in this current one, that doesn't make you better than anybody else. It just means that you have to look to other things when you're checking on how group polarization got to you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and a lot of this was just my response to our coverage of this latest thing from the Capitol. Just to see what people are truly thinking and why they would respond to us in, you know, information that I went back through just like we all did and listened to it again to make sure we were stating things correctly. We were very careful in our language. And dang, man, people are just still feel like in just stating the facts, we were somehow distorting things. And it is just really troubling, man. And I hope in some way we're able to, you know, speak to enough people, including myself, just to pull us out a little bit more from our own biases.
I wanted to say too, really quick, I've been personally really kind of heartened by the response overall that we've gotten to those two episodes, not only in how many people have listened to it, cause it's been a lot, but also in just the emails we've gotten. That's all. Just in general, they've been very positive.
Well, I get a lot of it. I welcome it. Let's see. Let's do this live. I don't know if anything will show up. Let me get my phone. Okay. So just 53 seconds ago on Twitter, at Ben Bullen HSW, I don't know why you guys took pains in part two to clarify that some people just happened to be there, got caught up in the moment as though they were on a fucking school tour when this deadly terrorist attack kicked off. P.S. is clearly more than one individual, the zip tie thing. We appreciate that. I don't think we did the wrong thing there, because again, with a massive amount of people like this, you can't think that everybody has the same plan. But we appreciate the feedback. And as what we really did take pains to talk about in part two of the attack on Washington was how little confirmed information was out there at that point.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like you said, Ben, we have to be cautious in not spreading misinformation. So sometimes we hedge a little bit. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't think so. And, you know, Matt, one point you made that I really appreciate is we weren't editorializing pretty much at all in the first part, right? And we said we would have some speculation in the second part. But a lot of the things we do, and this doesn't apply to every podcast in the world, but a lot of things we do, if we don't get people objecting to some of the stuff that we're relaying, if everybody just agrees with us, then that means that we could be doing a better job, in my opinion.
For sure. And just in response to those two things that I said on that episode that person is commenting about, because I remember saying them.
But that was, I think that was all of us.
It was two things that I specifically pointed out, just because it feels as though a lot of the discussion around this is painting everybody in the same light on either side.
Which is dehumanizing.
It is extremely dehumanizing. And if you take a side, essentially, you're guilty of it because you're saying all of these other people are like this. I just want to make sure that anyone listening to this understands that each individual that was even at that protest, the vast majority of the people who were there for a protest were not the same as people who showed up with zip ties, who showed up with, Molotov cocktails in their truck. Mm-hmm. Who showed up and napalm essentially in their truck and automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons ready to carry out something. Mm-hmm. It's just, we can't look at each other as all one thing. We're all individuals and there's intense belief on all sides going on here. We need to see each other a little differently in order to hopefully get through this. Because this is the kind of thing that doesn't go away, after an election. These are feelings that are long, and I don't know what I'm saying on my soapbox here. I'm just cautioning to remember that we are all individuals, and at heart we all want to be good.
I would hope so. But also you have to keep in mind, just to put a little dystopian umami in this whole conversation, as if we need more. If there were not foreign powers leveraging this situation that culminated or at least began on January 6th, then they will certainly be a part of future things. So when you hear other narratives, right, coming out in the coming days, coming months, etc., I would ask myself, qui bono, who benefits? Who benefits most? It may not be a domestic force, which should terrify people.
All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. We're gonna pause here. I think we're gonna keep this one at two stories for today. We're already at an hour or so, so we're gonna do that. And I will save my story for next week. If you live in Meade, Nebraska, here is looking at you. Hope you can feel our support from here in Atlanta. Hope you're doing well. We'll talk about that story and next week. For now, if you want to write to us and give us an idea for a story or for anything at all, you can find us on Twitter. As Ben said, we are at Conspiracy Stuff. We're also on Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show. Oh, Facebook is Conspiracy Stuff too. And we've also got a page over there on Facebook called Here's Where It Gets Crazy, a little group you can join and hang out with us. All you got to do is name one or all of us, including Doc Holliday, if you wish.
And welcome to our new mod. I want to say, folks, of course, originally Strange News Segment Weekly is structured to have three stories. We're going to endeavor to give three stories every time. This one we got a little rabbit hole on, but expect us to return to three in the coming segments. If you hate social media, you can give us a call on the old telephonical device. Some of the people of a certain age in the crowd remember when those things used to have wires, which is weird. That's why they're called landlines. But it'll work on a smartphone, too. Just dial 1-833-STD-WYTK. You have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours. All that we ask is that you specifically tell us if you do not want us to use your name and or voice on the air, which is totally fine. We just want to hear from you. But I hate phones, Ben.
Even the ones that are shaped like a football? Or you Garfield?
You may be saying, I hate phones. It's 2021. Phones are for texting and memes. Well, never fear. If you don't want to call us, you don't like social media, there's one way you can always get in touch with us. That is our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.